Welcome to the Jewelers Podcast, the podcast that talks to jewelers, retailers, and industry supporters about their experiences and insights into the jewelry industry.
The Jewelers Podcast is proudly brought to you by the sponsors of the Jewelry Industry Virtual Fair.
Book your tickets at www.jewelryindustryfair.com. Today on the podcast, Brett and I are joined by the globally recognised Rami Baron, CEO of Q Report and the Australian Jewellers Consortium.
All right, Rami, it's lovely to have you join us today on the Jewellers Podcast. You're here with myself, Brett Lowe from D Honey Jewellery and the Young Jewellers Group, and my co-host, Laura. I don't know, always meant to call you your maiden name then, but Laura Moore from The Marketing Mind and the Jewellery Industry Summit. So yeah, thank you very much for having us, coming to join us today, Rami.
Thank you, Rami.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, so Rami, you wear a lot of different hats within the jewellery industry. So maybe just talk us through some of your involvement in the jewellery industry for those who don't know you as well as myself.
Okay. So I'll go back a couple of steps and I'll try and give you a bit of a synopsis. So fundamentally, I'm from a third generation of family jewelers. My dad, my granddad, since I was a kid, I was in the trade. I had a jewelry business as in retail stores. I did some wholesale, did some exporting to the States for a while with Opal Jewelry. And about 25 years ago, I set up a consultancy, which was the first of its kind to manage jewelry claims on behalf of insurance companies. That's called the Australian Jewelers Consortium. And that company still exists today and actually very successful, still operates for a number of major insurers where we only manage the claim for them. We don't supply the goods. We do the analysis inside and we always recommend the client should be allowed to go back to the jeweler of their choice. 15 years ago, we realized that the insurance industry didn't get jewelry, didn't understand it. And so therefore, we recognized there was a need for a standalone jewelry insurance product. And we created the Q Report jewelry insurance product that many of your listeners are probably familiar with, as are you. And we've developed that for the last 15 years. Again, the way we did it was combining not just an insurance product, because anyone could offer insurance. It was about taking something that was really lacking, which was a beautiful, incredible presentation. I always like to use the word evaluation on steroids, right? And combining that with an insurance policy and really writing into the policy all the things that I saw were wrong with all the other home domestic insurance policies. And that was, you know, people were restricted to who they could go back to. People thought they were insured for a certain value and they weren't, and all these things. And basically we put that together. So that's from my commercial side of what I do, my business side of what I do. Over 10 years ago, I got elected to be president of the Diamond Dealers Club of Australia. It was still in its infancy and was going through a bit of trauma. And we had the opportunity to take ourselves to the World Federation and present ourselves to the World Federation of Diamond Bourses to see if we could be accepted as a member of the WFDB. So the WFDB is an organization today that has 29 clubs, bourses, around the world, just under 30,000 members, and 95% of all the polished goods in the world today goes through the hands of one of our members.
Wow.
I was given an opportunity to get up on stage, which was a terrifying experience, I have to tell you. I've done public speaking, but this was
next level.
Because the joke was, I went into this massive hall, right? It was about 1,000 people there. I knew no one. I mean, nobody. And I was with
out of 1,000. You would have known.
No, like that's crazy. Like I knew no one. Right? Like normally, there's always someone I know, right? Yeah. I brought with me a guy. Some of you guys know Roy Cohen from DCLA. At the time, he was the vice president of the club. He knew a few people because he was South African, and you know, he sort of knew a few people. And he's like, looks at me, he goes, it's up to you, mate. Like, you wanted us to come here. Go for it. So I'm like, okay, deep breath, you know, off I go. And I started to walk up to groups of guys and say to them, hi, Rami Baron, you know, Diamond Dealers Club of Australia. And they sort of look at you, Australia? Oh, that's far away, you know, yes. So I'm thinking, what am I going to say? Like, I just don't even know what to say. So I said, so what's important to you? You know, that why should we become a member? Because, you know, is it important? Do you think they'll accept us? And one guy said to me, you know, interesting enough, the fact that you're Australia, you're like the final continent in the world, that without you, we're not really the World Federation. You're down the bottom there, but you're really big. And that's a good reason for us. I went, oh, right, thanks. And then I sort of went past another guy and he said, oh, Diamond Dealers Club Australia, you have a bourse there, you know, a diamond club? Well, we're creating one, right? We never really had one, right? We're just a group of people, you know, who wanted one.
Sure, we've got one.
Exactly. And then he said, would you allow our members to come and visit your club and your members could come visit our club? Absolutely. It would be our pleasure, right? You know, and then another guy said to me something like, it sounds so good to have Australia as part of the World Fed. You know, I think it's a really, it really fulfills the whole product. So I said, great. Anyway, 2 days of this conference, sitting in the back listening, suddenly there's an announcement. The Australian representative, Rami Baron, President Dominic, will be coming up and presenting to the World Federation presidents and all at the Congress their presentation to become a member. No one told me this. I didn't know I was supposed to say anything. I'm like sweating bullets now, right? Like, right. So I had in front of me a document from them. And at the top of their logo, it says trust, integrity, reliability, you know? So I wrote that down and I quickly wrote a few notes and I stood up and they said, Mr. Baron, go ahead. And I stood there and I said, you know, thank you for having us. Look, without a doubt, without having Australia as part of the World Fed, you're not complete.
You're not complete.
And we want you to know that your members could come to our club and it'd be an open door policy.
Well done.
And we stand for three things: trust, integrity, reliability. And everyone, well, very good. But they elected, so they brought us in.
Fantastic. So that was, well, well done.
That was our entree. And then I got pretty involved pretty quickly. I sort of, you know, had a lot of opinions and was always talking. I know you find that hard to believe. And very quickly, I got, in about the second or third year, I was elected to the executive committee, where all the presidents around the world have to vote for, to be on the executive committee of the World Federation. And I actually said to them, gentlemen, you realize I'm not a traditional diamantaire. I don't wholesale diamonds. They said, we know, but you bring another perspective to us and we like what you're having to say and helps you speak a few languages so you can communicate with a bunch of different people.
Great.
And I got elected. And so I know that's a long answer to that question.
No, it's good. I've heard the story before and it is a good story. So I was happy to sit back and listen to it again.
What other languages do you speak?
So I speak Hebrew fluently, but I also can speak a pretty reasonable Cantonese.
Wow. Chinese.
Yeah, I didn't learn Mandarin because at the time when I was learning it, it was a time when in Australia a lot of people from Hong Kong were coming, and only the population from China changed after the Tiananmen Square issue then. And I have a reasonable understanding of German and
sehr gut,
yeah, especially ein bisschen Deutsch, you know.
Ein bisschen Deutsch.
Exactly. But I can get through, you know, most things. Mm. So so that's helpful. And then, so I then got elected chairman of the promotion committee. And 4 years ago, I created the Young Diamantaires.
Well, that's obviously something we certainly want to talk about today, because the group's really come along in leaps and bounds, even in the last 12 months, after our trip to South Africa, especially. There's some big changes happening at the moment for the group. So I was hoping you could tell our members about the new website and how people go about becoming a member and what they can get from being a member of the Young Diamantaires group.
Sure. So I just want to put a little bit of context, if I may. 4 years ago, I was in Dubai and we were sitting around an executive meeting and I put forward the idea that I'd like us to start a conversation with the younger generation. And everyone was saying, well, okay, so reach out to the different bourses and you can talk to them. I said, no, I don't want to restrict it to bourses. I don't want to stick to the diamond clubs. I just want to talk to people who are in the diamond industry under the age of, you know, 30, 40, you know, that sort of age, who are in the diamond and jewelry industry and just hear what they want to hear. What do they want to know? Because I'm very concerned that we're sitting around an executive table here and I'm the youngest guy at the table. So everyone's the average age of 70 plus. And I don't believe we have an understanding or a feel for what is happening there. So I'd like us to create this organization, or not an organization, but a group, you know, and just get some feedback. They said, well, you know, they have to be members of the club. I said, no, then I won't do it. I want to be open to anyone. They said, all right, go ahead and do it. So I literally sat down that evening with a bunch of youngsters who were there at the Congress. And I said, what do you want out of a club, of a group, you know, not a club, but a group of youngsters? And I said, you know, what age should be the limit? They said, oh, under 45, fine. How do you want to communicate? They said, WhatsApp to begin with, fine. And I said, what do you want out of it? And one person said one comment, which I always repeat whenever I tell this story. And he said to me, whatever you do, don't tell me to think outside the box, because I don't want a box. And I thought, okay, we got something here. So fast forward a few years, what I would do is I started to, when I was at a trade show, I'd go and I'd ask people if they want to join up, and I'd get other people in the group to join up, and we'd start a conversation. Interesting enough, the very first conversation I started on this WhatsApp group, I thought, what am I going to talk about? So I asked everyone to send a photograph of what loop they use. And people started to take photos and send pictures of the loop they use. And people started telling people, and everyone would just keep coming and saying, can you put this person on? And whenever I'd go to a trade show, the next thing I do is I do selfies with everybody. And then people would stop me and say, come on, do a selfie with me too. And that really grew. And then I held a breakfast and I got Leanne Kemp, who's the CEO of Everledger, to talk, to explain about blockchain. And then I brought a marketing guy from Australia, who was doing the head of marketing for Optus. He flew out and he did a presentation. And so it was really, really interesting. And like you said, Brett, last year, it's almost a year to date, where De Beers invited us to the Venetia mine to actually see a mining operation, one of the biggest mines in the world. And we got to see the community around them and what was driving, you know, what good did diamonds do in the communities. It really exploded the group. And one of our members, as you know, Harsh, actually, and a few guys, Chris, and that, they actually built a fabulous website for us called, you'll find it under www.ydts.org. And what is it? So your question is, what is it that people would, why would they want to join it? Well, first of all, you have to be under 45, number one. Number two, you have to be in the diamond and jewelry industry, and diamonds has to be a major component of your livelihood, right? And there is a vetting process, so you can just register and then people in your country will give you a call and see that you're a legitimate business, that you're the real McCoy. And then really the next step is, again, as you've seen, Brett, is two things. Number one, you have to be incredibly respectful in all of our chat forums. Respect is number one. Anyone who's not respectful is gone.
Yeah, especially that saying. Yeah.
Exactly. Two, in the actual chats themselves, there's no selling. You want to PM someone, you can PM them separately. And I'm very excited that people do business together. And a lot of people do. And people have made some amazing contacts. And for me, it's fundamental that any sort of organizational groups that we create, which we do have a number of them, we have strategy groups, marketing groups, blog groups, it goes on and on, are very evenly distributed and led by women and men. And that is core to everything I do, that we have to be gender neutral. We have to create a pathway of those who want to take on leadership, that they can find it. And within this organization, which is now it is an organization. Look, today there's probably 500 people worldwide because we have a young diamondteers worldwide. When we've got one in Europe, and we've got one in the Middle East as well. Wow. We've got three other locations who are asking to set up their own just for some local knowledge. Mm-hmm. It's really exciting. We have articles written about us every month, if not twice a month. We have organizations who are contacting us to get our opinion of young diamondteers. So I hold a number of webinars with different interested parties who want to know, what do we think? Not me, but obviously young diamondteers. Yeah. I like to see myself, you know, when you go 10 pin bowling and you're not really good and they put up the
bumper bars.
Think of me like the bumper bars in this group. You know, I like to make sure that the ball doesn't go off. You know, keeps down the path.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, these groups need to be guided. Like you can't rule them with a big stick, but you guide them in the direction you want them to go. You just point and then let the member base take it where it needs to go.
Yeah. But people do need a little bit of rules to say, you know, respect is paramount.
Yeah, because it's got some amazing members on there, like the contacts on there, which in the network, which everyone's mingling within each other is second to none, really. Like, it's quite amazing.
Totally. I mean, crazy.
Yeah. And it's so organic, the way the membership's grown. It wasn't so much about reaching out particular people to try and get them to join. It's just organically happened that way.
You're absolutely right. Yep. It's, I'm just pushing different people to make sure they describe what they do a bit better so that, you know, if you want to be friends with them, because there's a whole section, a member section behind where you can reach out to people privately and see what they're doing, and you need something. So, you know, it's always about that need. You know, someone asks, and I get too many emails and SMSs saying, where do I find an old cut? Or where do I find something really unusual?
The group is growing so much in such a short period of time. And by the sounds of it, since you went to Africa the last time, you've done a lot of work on the young diamondteers, not just connecting people and growing the group, but you've got a really strong philanthropic as well now with the group. You've just recently launched some projects in South Africa, which I think we should hear more about because they sound really fantastic. And I think they're in the Venetian Mines area. Is that right, Rami?
Correct, Laura. So one of the teams we put together was a fundraising team. It's led by Tamara Gabai. She's actually based in Australia and she's a diamond dealer. A lot of people know her. So that was about, we went to a school called the Renaissance School and we found out that there was 1,200 children at this school and they didn't have a library.
That's a lot. Yeah. Wow.
And no library.
Yeah. I mean,
like how does that work?
Yeah. How does it even operate as a school?
And everyone was like, oh, I'll donate books. They said, we don't need books. We need a you know, place to actually hold books before you give us books, you know? And then the most interesting thing came out was how many children come to school and they're lucky if they have one meal a day.
Mm.
And that was such a wow moment. And the next, that evening, was it that evening, Brett? You were there. Was it that evening?
Yeah. If it wasn't that evening, it was the next night. But yeah, it was.
Yeah. We had a barbecue and we were actually under a beautiful Boab tree. This ginormous Boab tree. Mm. And I got everyone to sit around. Brett was there at the time. And I got everyone to sit around the barbecue, the campfire. And I asked them, you know, what do they want to do? What are their thoughts about raising funds for this school? And everyone was a bit excited. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I said, you know, it's one thing sitting around here around the fire and just seeing it. And, you know, it's the momentum of the moment. It's another different thing making it happen.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, if you guys commit now, I'm going to hold you to it. Absolutely. Talk is cheap. Everyone gets excited around the campfire, you know? Mm-hmm. So the team, you know, teams were put together and a lot of discussion. And we literally launched it properly like 5 days ago.
Yeah.
Which is a year later to get it all together. It was very tricky because we had to set up special accounts. And why does that happen? A whole raft of stuff. Then we wanted to get video stuff done. And as we were about to get some video stuff done, COVID hit, you know? So we had to get one of the guys who lives in Kimberley to talk to the principal, to get some video clip from the principal, and he did a video clip. And I got a producer, a film producer who does TV work, to actually put the clip together for us. And the exciting part is that within 4 days that we've been live, we have raised just under $25,000.
Wow, congratulations. That's fantastic. Amazing. That's fantastic.
It's really amazing.
So what's the plan for the school, as in build time? Have you got a date for when you want to target?
Yeah, so the way we're going to do it, first of all, we have to raise, to see how much we can raise. We're probably a little bit overly ambitious with what we're trying to raise. But at a certain point, we'll say, okay, look, we've done the maximum we can. And we've already been in very deep discussions with De Beers, because you can't just go and build these rooms. It actually has to be approved by the Department of Education, South Africa. And they have a rule which says every school has to be the same.
Oh, wow.
So you're now giving one school something that other schools don't have. Now, fortunately, De Beers actually, and what you were saying, by the way, the school is in an area called Messina, which is just next to the Venetia mine. So De Beers had already contributed to building the school, and they have a special group who manage any projects, because as you can appreciate, you know, a lot of countries which are very poor are renowned for having problems of money, you know, disappearing, and, you know, how's it going to be managed, and all that. So De Beers looks after that. And so we had to come up with an arrangement with De Beers that whatever we do, that they will look after the money and manage it correctly so that it can be achieved. So what we're hoping is that we get to a certain point, and then De Beers sees our contribution, then maybe they make an additional contribution and we get that happening. So the real logistics of building, we won't get involved with, because we'll never be able to manage it. But we'll be working closely with the De Beers team to make sure that it's done ethically. And all that's why these things took so long. I mean, it takes months sometimes to get people to respond to certain letters, and you have to start on contacts.
I think it's worth mentioning too, like how you said that school was built by De Beers. That was just one of many. I forget the exact figure off 12. The top of my head. Yeah, 1 of 12 schools that they had built from scratch. So, so we're just helping them finish it off, really. Like,
that's excellent. And there's a GoFundMe page, Rami, isn't there? So if any listeners would like to donate to this fantastic project, they can head to the GoFundMe page.
We'll put something we posted. We'll forward you something. I mean, I think it's Renaissance Fundraising, but I mean, we have a little video clip to it. So maybe at the end of this, when you post your thing, a little link.
Absolutely. We'll make sure listeners can see the link to the GoFundMe page in our show notes.
Well, the link I have saved, because I still need to do my donation, is YD Supporting African Children and Communities. So I'm sure if somebody Googled that, they'd probably find it on GoFundMe.
So if you put YD, that'll probably get you probably there.
I'm sure you get halfway there.
Fantastic. That's great. What are the next plans, Rami, for the Young Diamond Tears?
Good question. The next plans... There's actually a lot of ideas. I think the biggest obstacle for us and everyone else is, you know, meeting and greeting, okay, in the world that we're in. And I hate to say this, but I can tell you on pretty good advice of people who are in the travel insurance industry, okay? So this is not just Rami thinking this. This is people who've done a lot of deep and heavy analysis. We're probably not going to, the majority of us are probably not going to be traveling properly till the end of next year.
Wow. Yep.
Overseas and stuff like that.
Ooh.
I know. So you're talking like a year and a half.
Yeah.
That's how they look at their industry. They think their industry won't go back to normal till the end of 2021. Yeah.
Wow.
So a lot of our plans were based around meeting, networking. The big project that I'm going to make happen, because the response when I once mentioned it on the chat group was off the rails, is I'm going to organize to bring a large group to India. And we're going to get a tour in Surat of lots of the big companies and even small ones, and really build some amazing networking events. And I mean, do you remember, Brett, when we had that chat online, that went off. That was like Oh, yeah. Morning and night, ping, ping, ping. I want to come too. Yeah. I want to come too. I mean, the South African thing was such a wasn't it? It was like,
yeah.
So going to India, I think, will be an amazing one, and we'll look to match that with something in Mumbai as well. The team asked me, so I have some really serious guys in India who are part of the group. When I say serious, they're part of the top 100 diamanteers in the world, right, who were behind us. Like they would just turn it on for us all.
Yeah. That's wonderful. So it'll take that would be great to organize that anyway. Probably it sounds like a big project.
Exactly. We probably need someone to help us organize it, Laura.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. That sounds really, really exciting. Yeah, I think there's a lot to be learned from overseas, and it's really wonderful that you've been able to bring Australia into the conversation, into the global conversation around diamonds, and then connect, you know, different parts of the world with what we bring to the table too. So it's really nice that we've finally been able to, you know, be a little bit more integrated with that global conversation. And I think we've got you to thank for that, Rami, and stepping out on that stage to 1,000 people back when you weren't sure what to say. So that's it's a great achievement, that's for sure.
Thank you. Thank you. It really is about the conversation. You know, you see some of the conversations that happen online, you know, for a long time, there was a lot of conversation about lab grown diamonds, you know, and what their perspective was. There was a lot of tension about, you know, who's responsible for marketing and who makes the money in the trade, you know, and there was some, you know, quite tense conversations there. But there's some fabulous links in our group. I mean, you want to know of anything that's happening in the diamond world, anywhere in the world, at any moment in time, or something major politically, within seconds, it'll be on our chat. Mm. Within seconds. There isn't anything that's going to happen in the world today, in our space, that you're not going to know about like that. It's unbelievable. It's crazy.
And we're able to bring that knowledge then back into the local industry. That's one of the things I like the most about the group, is I'm learning so quickly and I'm ahead of the curve with exactly what's happening, as you say, to the second, and then I can bring that knowledge into my own business. That's what I find so beneficial about the group.
And that's it, you know, you have to try and be a little bit ahead of the curve at all times.
Always.
You know, knowledge is power in the nicest way.
Absolutely. Yeah.
As much as we've been wetting our feet into the podcast world, you're also wetting your toes. So why don't you tell us about what you've been up to in the pot with your podcast recordings that are up and coming?
What I want out of my podcast is I want to know what motivates people. I think in some cases I achieved it. In other cases, I don't think I did. I think it was a bit airy-fairy, to be honest. And I think I'm getting more and more direct.
Better go along, yeah.
Better at it, yeah. But I want to understand two things in particular, and this is where I'm going to be focusing. One is how people overcame difficult situations. And also, I find it very interesting the parental transition from handing over businesses to children. And in fact, I started to do some research on it. I might even at some stage write a paper or even a book on it, because it really fascinates me what makes it successful and what isn't successful. And I have so many amazing contacts to bounce off. Mm. And so I thought I'm going to play in it in the podcast space. I'll share with you a couple of really good stories, though, from podcasts. I don't mind sharing. One of them was I did an interview with Edward Usher and Mike Usher. So the Usher family are one of the most prestigious diamond families in the world. They have the Royal House of Usher. They're the family that cut the Cullinan diamond. They invented the first patent of the Usher cut diamond. Great stories.
Mm, and beautiful stones. I fell in love with an 11.1 carat Usher cut diamond at Bunda in Sydney about 10 years ago. And I've been a different woman ever since.
And did you limit yourself?
It's still on my bucket list, that diamond. Right. I've got photos of it, and it's my true love, that stone.
Funny, I can really appreciate it, because I made for my wife a whole collection of Usher cut diamond pendant and bracelets, because I really love that. Love the stuff. Yeah. So I said to, so Edward was saying to me, he told me a very cute story. He said, he came to his children. He said, on the 3rd of March, some date like that, I'm going to retire. And they were like, whoa, what are you doing? What do you mean retire? Why? He said, because on that day, I've worked in this company for 50 years.
Wow.
Right? Now, you have to understand, Edward Usher has been a senator in the Dutch parliament or the Netherlands in Belgium. He's, I think he'd be knighted. I mean, the guy's got everything, you know, like really amazing. And such a just, you know, non-showy, elegant, sophisticated man. Mm. So he said that he actually hired a business coach, right? Mm. To help him make the transition.
Excellent. Well, that's very wise.
Oh, so wise. I mean, amazing, right? Like a guy, you know, he was in his mid-70s and there he is, he hires his business coach. And it was a woman, right? And which, I mean, you know, I just think is even more impressive personally, yeah. Right? You know, and here's the best part. So he said, so he's sitting at his desk and he's looking at the window and he sees his business coach standing there. And he says to himself, he goes, you know, it's interesting. She looks a bit like my wife. And then he sits there and he says, you know, it's interesting. Even when she talks to me, she even talks a bit like my wife. He said, and then I thought, you know what she says? It's the sort of thing that my wife says. It's funny, I have to go and hire a business coach to find out what my wife's been telling me all the time.
Every wife says that. I told you so. Yeah.
I just couldn't hear it.
That's great.
So, you know, really, really good. Really, oh, fantastic. Really good. So
they're, you know, still in that transition, aren't they, Rami? They're still sort of transitioning. I know Edward has stepped down, but he's still the president of the World Diamond Association.
So Edward Usher is now president of the World Diamond Council, which is the organization that manages the Kimberley process. Mm-hmm. But he is totally out of the family business. He's not director on the. He literally signed over all the assets to the kids, wow. Lita and Mike. They have to run it. I mean, sure they chat, but you know it's he's really handed it over. Very unlike most families, you know, where the parents still want to hold on. That's very impressive, incredibly mm-hmm. impressive. The way he approached
it's a legacy to pass over. That's a lot to carry.
Next generation.
Very fascinating. We can't wait to hear the podcast.
I wanted to know a little bit more about the Diamond Dealers Club of Australia too. Like how active is the club and what are you guys involved? Well, I shouldn't just say guys and girls. What are you guys involved with?
Right. Okay. So the Diamond Dealers Club has actually, it was a bit sort of stagnant for a long time. And it was hard to really work out what is it that people wanted. And then it's sort of a few of us who were doing stuff, it came to us and we kicked it off again and it's actually taken off very nicely. Although, yes, we're a club, we don't have a fixed location. We're a bit of a virtual club, you know, but we have been having conversations and we've been doing things. In fact, just recently we redesigned our logo. We have a new logo, which is great. Probably more today one. What we've been doing is really talking and sharing information, helping each other. And that's been the main thing that's been happening. And I'll tell you a really fantastic story, which happened just recently. I won't mention the names, but I'll just say that two very good operators. So one was in Melbourne. It's a woman who actually has a very successful business. And she reached out to me and she said, I've got a problem with the lockdown. I can't get my goods out. And I have a number of clients in America who want to deliver these very serious engagement rings that I've made for them. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to do. Like, what do you suggest? And I said, that's why you have the club. She said, what do you mean? I said, reach out to a member of the club that you know, or if you don't, I'll put you on to someone. And I promise you, they will help you because that's what it's about, especially now. And she did. And, you know, I rang one guy, said, you know, this person, yep, this is her situation. He said, listen, and he rang her up. He said, here's the deal. You send me whatever you need. I will have my guys manufactured at cost price and I will organize a FedEx to send it to the States. and all those sales were saved. And he said, I don't want anything, just my cost price.
Fantastic. That's amazing. Amazing. That's the power of
that in itself, the power of the farm. Amazing.
Mm. Well done. Yeah, that's really fantastic to see other people supporting each other, regardless of the location, totally. Regardless of, you know exactly. their situation.
Another thing we're doing now is we're having discussions about potentially buying a group order of the Yehuda machine, which is the one that tests for synthetics. So there's been a lot of discussion, which is the best machine to buy? Can we buy it as a group? You know, we've had a few discussions, which are really, really good, where people have heard of people who are doing the wrong thing. And within the group, it was sent out, look, watch out for this. This person's been known to he's asking for goods and that. So we have a combination there of some dealers, a number of dealers, and we actually have retailers who are very good, you know, diamonds are probably 80% of their business. And that's going really well. So if we can just have great conversations and help each other and share information, that's what a club needs to do today. A club is not what it used to be in terms of even like an organization, association today. If you think of the JAA, right? The JAA is obviously going to struggle with membership. Why? Because years ago, you had to be a member of an organization to even operate in an industry, correct? You know, yep. You can't be a dentist without being part of the dental association. You can't be a lawyer without being part of the legal association. So they have a guaranteed supply of members and revenues and, you know, and you have to be part of it. That's not true in the jewelry industry. Anyone can become a jeweler. Anyone can be call himself a diamond dealer. So why do you need to be a member of an organization? What is the organization going to do for you? And it's really hard. Now, your event that you're creating, Laura, the summit, which you're doing that, I mean, the value there is you're creating a place to communicate, right? And to educate, right? Well, this is parallel to what we're trying and succeeding doing is we've got a place to provide information, not necessarily educate, provide information and create that network of communication. Brett, your young jewelers is the pinnacle of that, where, I mean, I love the conversation that people ask questions and people help them and make suggestions on the simplest stuff. I mean, I watch that stuff all the time, you know, about how should I solder this? How should I descale that? You know, and all this, you know, I find that great. But I'll tell you something. I just wrote an article, which I did find irritating. Maybe not irritating, but a bit, really, you're asking this question. And it was, someone put a question out saying, you know, what website should I use? What should I do website-wise? And I'm thinking, why are you even in business if you're asking that question?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
interesting.
You want to ask that question?
it's such a good point, because the need for businesses, whether it be associations, not-for-profit, businesses that are operating for-profit, to shift and change their relevance is more crucial now than ever before. And unless people do make those shifts and understand the consumer, understand their customers' needs, understand how they can affect change in their industry or in the market, they're not going to be as successful as the person that's sitting next to them that is doing that. So I think it's fascinating to see all these different solutions, whether it be in our industry or in other industries, popping up that are relevant and that our people are excited by. I mean, I know that, I mean, obviously, you know, Brett, you've got so many members on the Young Jewelers Group. The summit has hundreds and hundreds of jewelers from all over the country that are registered to attend. It's looking really fantastic. And obviously all of the areas that you're branching out in different areas of communication, Rami, are exactly the same. It's wonderful.
Exactly. Mm. And this is what we all want and need.
Mm, exactly right. Yeah. And obviously the foot traffic is speaking for itself.
So the one thing that I always found unfortunate in Australia up until relatively recently. When did you start, Brett, the Young Jewelers? How many years ago?
Yeah, it's nearly 10 years now.
Right. Wow. Mm. So I would say to you, and when did it make that real jump? 5 years ago?
Yeah, like I guess once you really start getting like the thousands of members, probably was something around that. Yeah, like I'd have to go back and have a look at it, but it'd be something like that.
Let's use a ballpark 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So what I would say to you is, look, I've been in Australia for 48 years. So I grew up here. I went to school here. And I've been working, my working career, say I started at 18, you know, and I'm, how old am I now? 56, right?
Yeah.
So I've been doing this for a few years, right? You know, 30 years. And I always was incredibly frustrated by the lack of communication in the industry that, you know, diamond dealers wouldn't talk to each other. Oh, I'm not going to tell him what I'm doing. I don't talk to him. Everyone's secretive, and why should I share? You know, he's my competitor. And it's such a short-sighted perspective. Mm-hmm. And until, you know, okay, some of the buying groups were better because they actually, you know, they had a commonality where they would chat. But I just found that incredibly sad that people looked at everyone as a competition and didn't realize that, you know, you can actually share and you'll get more out of sharing. So we're all on the same page here, and that's probably why we're having this conversation.
That's right. All... That's right.
Yeah, lift the whole industry together.
That's totally. Right. Remy, jewelry is in your blood. You must have stones flowing through your blood as a third generation jeweler and just operating in so many different areas in the jewelry industry in Australia and internationally. But how does jewelry make you feel?
Interesting question. How does jewelry make me feel? It's interesting. My most enjoyable moment in jewelry is when I go to the trade show in Hong Kong and I go to the designer pavilion on the top floor. Mm. And also there's a section, often the Italian section as well. And I walk around and I'm looking for something that inspires me or excites me. Maybe it's a gem that I think, oh my God, that's breathtaking. Like, and for me, color gems are like candies. You know, like we see an amazing emerald or ruby or sapphire. It's like, oh my God, look at it. It's just like surreal. It's so beautiful. So I do love that. I love a beautiful diamond. I saw an incredible 25 carat pear shape on a fine, super fine pendant, just for a woman to wear, just as a drop.
Thing.
I mean, it was like this teardrop, 25 carat, flawless. Ugh. You know, so simplistic, so beautiful. Mm. So that definitely excites me. Design, when I see a beautiful design, but for me, I don't like to see design for the sake of just trying to be out there. I like to see jewelry that is beautifully designed, but wearable. I don't think it's a functional piece of jewelry that a woman would wear. It's a bit like a frock that you see, or a dress that you see at a fashion show. Yeah, but no one's going to wear that. So that's too weird, right? And I love women's fashion. I buy my wife half her wardrobe. I love buying clothes for my wife. Yeah. So I really like a beautiful design, and I'd love to see something a little bit unusual. There's a jeweler out of Hong Kong, and they're actually called Forms, F-O-R-M-S. Yeah. And they do, in my opinion, some of them coolest late new designs. When I've spoken to other people in the trade, I said, you know, I saw someone amazing, and they go, Forms, like,
yeah,
we all agreed. Have you seen their work?
Yeah Forms is one of my favorite. I often visit their Instagram to see what's happening there. I really, really like their work.
Breathtaking, you know, and they have the gems cut to the designs they want to create. So
yeah.
Oh, that excites me. I love to see, and I love to see beautiful craftsmanship. You know, I'm still the guy who will take a ring and turn it upside down and put a loop to it. And I want to see, did they clean under rails? Did they really clean behind the stone? Or did they stick it in? You know, for me, those things are critical. So beautiful workmanship. There's a gentleman that I, whenever I need something polished on the odd occasion, I go and see him. His name is Alex Jenlick, and he's in Pitt Street, 250 Pitt Street. He's over 80 years old. You'll see sometimes Nick Haywood posts about him whenever he has his birthday. And he's probably the greatest polisher in Australia. His knowledge is unbelievable. And when he polishes, and his rhodium is whiter than white, and when you hold a piece that he's done, it's like, wow, he takes it to a whole nother level. Because that's such an art.
Yeah. And it is. It's a beautiful art form, jewelry manufacturing. It's stunning.
Totally.
We're very lucky to have people like him in Australia that have got a lifetime of experience and, you know, at the top of their game.
Totally.
Rami, out of all of the projects that you've been part of and all the businesses and initiatives that you've built, what are you the most proud of?
My children. Exactly. My late father used to say, I'm a millionaire. I have $3 million. Each of them is my children. And, you know, back then, a million was a lot of money. There's my investments. Look, I have to say to you, what I'm most proud of, I mean, it's very exciting to create businesses that have never been created before and make them successful. So the Australian Jewelers Consortium, no one ever done it. And 25 years, it's still a great business. So, you know, to have that longevity, you have to be doing something right. Then to create QReport and be the number one jewelry insurance product in Australia. We've just launched in Singapore as well. We're about to launch in a few other places around the world. Even now, we've got the plans on the board. It's exciting. It's very inspiring. The Young Diamantaires has a real soft spot for me, you know, because it's growing. It's only in its infancy. And I'm getting such wonderful feedback. You know, PM, you know, people sending me messages saying, thanks, and you're doing great. And you know, that's very heart inspiring. But I'll tell you what really pulls on my heartstrings. Mm-hmm. What really pulls on my heartstrings is when I can sit with a jeweler and hear his or her story and see where they're at and know that I can give them some ideas and suggestions, not ideas, but suggestions on how to smooth the bumps in their path and save them some time and money and lead them to where to look where they haven't looked previously. Mm. So I guess it's a degree of mentoring. And there's a lot of people, when I say a lot, there's probably 20 people around the world that I do this with. That to me is the ultimate because you're impacting on someone's life, you're helping them. And yeah. I don't want anything from it. I just love to be able to help someone and I can see and just experience. And it doesn't take away from me to share that experience and that knowledge and to put people together. Someone's looking for something desperately and I help them. Or, you know, that story that I said about the jeweler in Melbourne and that, I mean, like, how can you not feel so, you know, pulling the heartstrings knowing that
you're rewarded by that. Yeah.
Great. So that for me is my ultimate.
The ultimate. I love it. That's great. And it's got such a good ripple effect as well, because you're not just helping one person. They're then, you know, being more successful and their whole community thrives as a result. So that's great. Well done. Yep. It's been so wonderful having you, Rami. I'm really appreciative. We both are of you joining us on the podcast today.
You talk about giving back there, and you've always been a massive supporter of myself personally and of the Young Jewelers Group. And we're really grateful to have people like you in the local industry. So thanks again for being on the podcast today. And once again, giving back, giving of your time and sharing your knowledge and information. So it's, I'm happy to call you a friend and a colleague. And once again, it's great to have you in the Australian industry. So yeah, thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure. And I wish you a lot of success with all the podcasts, and I'll be looking forward to listening to them. All right, so
good luck. Thanks again, Remy.
Thanks for joining us on the Jewelers Podcast. If you'd like to know more about how to be part of the Jewelers Podcast, head to our Facebook or Instagram page. See you next time.